and this is home. So, you know, that's why I am a circle evangelist, because to me it is the salvation of humankind, for us to get out of our hierarchies, out of our patriarchy, and be in the right relationships as male, female, and with all of the species.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I'm the producer, Dennis Tardon, of this podcast, and I'm here with the founder, Clay Boykin. Hello, Clay.
Hi, Dennis. How you doing? You know, we've got a wonderful show today. My dear friend, Ann Smith, we finally got together and you're finally here so we can have a conversation.
Hey, Ann.
Hi, Dennis. Hi, Clay.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, we've known each other for quite a while via the Charter for Compassion, and we may get into some of that in a bit, and we'll talk some about Sarah, and we'll wander all over the place. But where I wanted to start was, I think it was on the interview that you and I did a while back when you were interviewing me, and you referred to yourself as a circle evangelist. And I'm wondering, can you go into that a bit and share with us what's that all about?
I would love to. And thanks for the question. It's actually back in the 70s. I went through a program that was on personal growth, group dynamics, and organization development. And in that, I learned the real value of circle, where every voice is heard, you fully participate, everyone is equally valued and equally shares. Mm-hmm. Then I used this when I worked in the Episcopal Church on a national level. I said, let's, because you can do this, and I did this with leadership programs all over the world, because the Episcopal Church is part of the Anglican Communion, which is 80 million people. And what I found about for circle, as a circle evangelist, so often in religion, you're evangelizing about God or your religion.
Yes.
And I see religion as that which makes you closer and to one another and to nature and to whoever you call God. And you can't do that in a hierarchy. In a hierarchy, there is a pecking order, as you know. Mm-hmm. There is a pyramid in which usually it's white males at the top and white is right kind of thing. And then, of course, in the church, you have bishops, and then you have clergy, and then you have lay, and then you have young women, and you have young people. And so you just turn it upside down. And in a circle, which I learned, especially learned with working for the last 30 years with Indigenous people, is the sacred hoop. Mm-hmm. It represents all the races. It represents the four seasons. It represents the four directions. And we are all in the hoop. No one is greater than the other. And that includes the trees. I mean, try to live without having oxygen from the trees. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, then to me, that is heaven on earth. Because when we're in a place, and we have created that place, in which we're all equally value and equally share the resources, the power, the love, the information, that is what many people have defined as heaven. And heaven can be on earth here and now. And it's so simple, but so difficult, because we've all been raised in the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So true. You know,
Clay and I were talking about that earlier.
Yes, we were. And, you know, when you were talking, when you showed the hoop there, I was immediately, my mind went back to Tasmania. And remember the conversation there that we had?
I don't remember. I wasn't there, so I think you need to tell me.
Well, you were there. You just forgot about it.
All right.
it was Patty Murray, and he said that, you know, he was working with both the local people and Indigenous people. Different.
Oh, okay. Well,
and in that circle,
I remember that. Yes.
And there were all different nationalities in the circle, and he sat there and he was the facilitator. And he turned to the local person here on the right and he said, "We're in a circle." "Hey, you know what that means, don't you?" And the man to his right said, "Yes, I do." And then he leaned over to the left to the indigenous man and said, "We're in a circle. You know what that means, don't you?" He said, "Yes, I do." And the circle proceeded. That it, the circle is cross culture throughout history, throughout time. It's the natural state. Where did we go wrong?
There's a lot of good history books now being written about why we, where we went wrong. And I heard that the first temple actually had circles in it. But then when people started congregating, you know, we went around, we began, and we know that in our hearts, we began around the campfire, right?
Mm-hmm.
In our ancient being. And we told in that our stories of survival and of celebration, where the food was, how the, and the herbs and the medicine, and where the antelope are going or where this is going. Well, you know, native people still do that. They still do that. And, you know, a lot of times they'll say native people's wisdom. Think also about native people's science, because of observation is amazing. And a couple years ago, well, about 20 years ago, when Christine Todd Whitman was the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, a friend of mine went up and studied what was happening in Alaska. And she had elder circles. And the elders would sit around. They could tell you if the fur was getting thicker or less. They could tell you where the herds were. They could tell you exactly. They had better data than all the scientists going up there to talk about climate change.
I can understand that, Anne, but I want to think about this a little deeper, because are we not all indigenous as a human being? I mean, I understand that we have indigenous people that came across the Bering Straits and that went down, but when we go into our prehistory, 100,000 years ago, or didn't we all come from this place? Didn't we all come from a place of sitting around and sitting around and having circles and having that? Well, isn't this built into our DNA? Sure, we in the West went off on our own and got this hierarchy and built the patriarchy and all that as a way. But that's not necessarily the way that human beings actually were wired or had this over millennia.
You're so right, Dennis. And it is in our DNA. And that's why when we remember who we are as part of nature, not separate from nature, that's when, and we experience circle on that level, it is so easy. And we feel like we're at home. And this is home. So, you know, that's why I am a circle evangelist, because to me, it is the salvation of humankind for us to get out of our hierarchies, out of our patriarchy, and be in the right relationships as male, female, and with all of the species and all of, you know, all of the elements, seriously. If we do that, we're actually so much fun. I mean, aren't you guys really having fun doing this work that you're doing? I mean, isn't it rewarding? Because when I've done leadership programs in every part of the world, always in developing countries, when I see women step into their leadership, believe that they can be leaders, nothing is greater for me. Nothing is greater than that. And all I do is that I'm giving you permission to be who you were before you were colonized. And it was usually at that time by the English, or it could have been by the Americans, because the Anglican Church is, you know, where we were colonizers.
Yep.
When they go back to their indigenous, and for the indigenous people here in the United States, for most people I work with, what they have done is taken their indigenous wisdom and practices and incorporated it into the Episcopal or their faith practices And it enriches both. It enriches both. You know, and I think that's what we're talking about as men and women. What we have is women and men, if we come together in that kind of right relationship, we enrich one another. It's not, you know, it's not I'm taking away from you and you're taking away from me. But I'll tell you, that was the hardest thing working in the patriarchy. It was like the women are going to take money, take power away from the men.
Yeah. And, you know, we were wondering, because Clay and I have been talking about this a lot, and on how it feels, the framing of patriarchy, it looks like men are having to give something up. And while one of the things that Clay and I ask questions about, well, what is enough? What would be enough that we could actually have all our needs met, have everything taken care of, instead of having to store up several? Do we actually know? Do we understand what is enough? And that in the patriarchy, there's never enough. There's always a need to acquire more. And I think that's one of the questions where we can break through this so that we can really see what is enough.
I agree. That's that whole thing about power. We're not talking about power over, you know, we're talking about power with. And power, like love, is totally unlimited. Power comes, let's say, from the universe or the creator, whatever you want to say. And when I don't take away, you know, if I don't give up my power, you can't take it. Right? If I don't give up my rights for what I need to have for my family, you can't take, well, you could take it away from me. You can't, that can become out of balance. But it is just say, for us in relationship, it is, in the West, we don't know what is enough because we're consumers.
Yeah, that goes.
Yeah, and if we can get out of that consumer, that whole consumer ethos, we're all going to be happier. And there is enough. We know that. We've always said we can produce enough food for everybody. And everybody can produce their own food in their own little community. And we can produce everything we need. And we don't need all this other stuff because we know that doesn't make people happy. That isn't where happiness comes from. It comes from love and relationships.
You know, I'm going to get this almost right, so work with me, okay? But what I'm coming to learn is that when Copernicus came out and said, no, we are not the center of the universe. The Earth is not the center. The sun, we rotate around the sun. That was a huge shift. It just, everything, all the beliefs that went up to that point, everything changed. And it was the technology, the science that was coming up that it became moved away from, like what we're talking about being one with the earth and so forth, to separation.
Yeah.
And progress. And while the patriarchy may have evolved before that, I think that's really when it started to take off, and the myth of progress evolved and the patriarchy came out. And today we're living the fruits of the myth of progress and the failings, because the other myth is the myth of the fall. And, you know, yes, there are goods and there's some good that has come through the patriarchal system, but there's been a lot of bad too.
Well, what if we took it out of that good and bad dynamics and just said what it is? I mean, we've certainly seen that, right? I mean, we've certainly seen progress. We also have any progress comes at a price.
Yeah.
on whatever it costs. Like,
well, it goes back to your
progress at the gym, right? Yeah. It comes at a price. You need to put time into the gym. You need to sit and do the reps on the machine. I mean, if we take all the pejoratives out of it and just say that it comes at a price, well, some of it comes at a price of wiping out civilizations, and some comes at a price of losing our soul, you know, losing our peace of mind.
Yeah.
And we just have to determine what that is and what we're really willing to readjust.
Well, it goes back to your point of, well, what's enough, you know? I wanted to ask, while we're on the topic of circles, I saw something about the millionth circle. What can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Jean Shinoda Bolen, who is a Jungian psychiatrist, and she loves archetypes being a Jungian psychiatrist. When she was at, it was a conference to stop the proliferation of nuclear warfare,
mm-hmm.
nuclear arms. And the whole, the story of the 100th monkey came to her.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Right? And Rupert Sheldrake kind of thing. And now that's sort of not been proven out. But the millionth circle isn't like there's a million circles. It is like you've been changing human behavior. And as we know, with how something will catch on, even a phrase or behavior or whatever. And it just goes like a virus. It can just mm-hmm. go boom. So that's what the millionth circle is. So we formed around her book and with her. And we have been together since 2001. In fact, we had a call today. So we check in with one another. And it was our whole point was our whole mission is to seed and nurture circles and to influence the United Nations. Now, influencing the United Nations is a pretty big mission. Seeding and nurturing circles is easy. But we keep doing it. The old is failing, as you said. It's falling away. And, you know, one of the things you can talk about patriarchy is the characteristics. Mm-hmm. So if you list the characteristics, you don't have to go good and bad. But aggression is no longer needed, and it can be very harmful. So it's just being assertiveness, a non-aggressive behavior, right? So we can begin to do that. Hate is no longer needed and wanted. Compassion and love are. So if you put those, so what you could just say is, I'm not going to support power over and aggression. I'm not going to support hate. I'm not myself going to hate. I'm going to be compassionate, and I'm going to start everything with the feeling of love. And that sometimes takes some real work when you're working with people that, you know, that you're just opposed to. But if I were to counter people's hate and their anger with hate and anger, of course, what good am I? I'm no longer a leader in the new.
You know, Anne, I was, may I?
Please, go ahead.
If I think of it this way, is that the world has, what has happened in my sense is that the world has now evolved to a level of complexity where the patriarchy, where might makes right, where it's all in it for me, whatever it is, that when you're in a level of complexity where we're in an interdependent, interconnected world, when something turns over here, everything else has to turn. When it's actually a dance more than it's a drive, that in that sense, that when it's just too complex for the patriarchy to be able to, just as functioning, if you take all the pejoratives out of it, whether it's good or bad or whatever, it is a non-functional system when you get to these kinds of levels of complexity where collaboration and cooperation and synergy and are the key elements.
When we have the knowledge of the world right here, And every person has it right here, this you know, iPhone or whatever you use, then everybody knows what's going on. In the days when they didn't, you know, the hierarchy in the church, you know, the exoteric approach, you know, these are the rules. I, the senior person, can look behind the veil into the esoteric, but you can't. So there's my power and control. But that was my way of controlling the masses. But now the masses are all walking around with their iPhones. So they know. And so with all everyone knowing, the hierarchical system has to be really carefully looked at.
And also to see where it needs to function and where it doesn't. And as far as I'm concerned, and I know I'm very biased, I think it only needs to function in an emergency. And let me just explain. I raced sailboats with my husband for years. And you can only have one captain, right? But the rest of us are all in sync. But then you take it even deeper. When you're on a sailboat, who's really in control? It's nature. It's the wind. It's the tides. It's this. So it's like we're all learning to be in sync with a greater power. And so, and there's nothing more beautiful for me to be on a sailboat like that. All of a sudden, when everything, the sails are trimmed just so, and you are going just really very, very fast. And there's something really quite beautiful about. Well, that's to me when we are in harmony, when we're working together. When we are working together, and when you're working together in a circle, even if there does become an emergency, we have already set the norms of how we're going to behave to one another. We've already set our values of how we're going to be, what our values are. So if there's an emergency, we know what to do. And you may have one person saying, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that. But we already have that understanding. Mm-hmm. It isn't somebody who thinks they have more knowledge than the rest of us as a group, as a circle. That's what patriarchy has done for too long. Competitive, I'm going to keep that information to myself so that, no, you won't have the latest discovery in how to deal with this virus. Or you won't have the latest information about this little war that could actually be stopped, but somebody is benefiting from it. So that's the great thing with the internet. But I think the great thing of the higher consciousness of humanity right now is that we want to be cooperative. We want to be in sync with one another.
Let me try this. I think this came up when we spoke last. And back in the 80s, there was this thing going around. I was at Motorola, and we would reorganize every year or two. And we would organize by markets. Then we'd organize by product. So we were, you know, we had the hierarchical system with the product focus and more of a circle or a lateral system, project-driven system with the markets. And we argued back and forth which was right. And I thought, well, wait a second. We're at a level of consciousness here. I didn't have the word consciousness, but we're smart enough that we can, it's not a either or, it's a yes and. And back then the language I used was, the hierarchical system is where you go home to roost at night, but where the work gets done is by project. You're in charge of that project, Ann, and I'm on your team. I'm in charge of this project, and Ann, you're on my team, simultaneously. So there's nuance in that. But we're at a level of consciousness where we can work to that.
Well, see, I also believe that, I think I mentioned Frederic Laloux from France, who has written Reinventing Organizations. Okay. And he takes, and his work is so good. And he's totally authentic. He lives in the woods. He doesn't want to go on speaking tours. But he got it. He got how when you're in a hierarchy, he calls it the red. And the red is where there's that real kind of aggressive energy. Mm-hmm. And then when you work up and you have flattened that hierarchy and you have those parts of your organization, and it can be a huge organization or it can be small, all interconnected. Mm-hmm. And the CEO is connected. You see, the CEO is a figurehead in many ways, but knows all the parts, but gets the information from everyone else who is doing the work, like you said, who is actually doing the work, and then can make good decisions for the organization. But he's doing this on behalf of the organization, not his own ego. And you cannot, you know, one organization cannot communicate with 5,000 others in an organization. You have to have that kind of one-on-one. And sure. This happened, of course, this happened with indigenous people. That's how the chiefs were always organized, you know, in the Iroquois Nation. And it was the grandmothers who appointed them and could say, you're not speaking on behalf of the people. You're out. But so again, it was when you sit in that circle, and that's what he called a circle. And when it got up to that real circle level that I'll call, he doesn't call it a circle level. He calls it the teal, that we've gone into the vibration of teal. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's when we're spiritual. So can you imagine? And then when he has he has all of these wonderful stories of organizations that have done that. I mean, years like when I was doing my work outside of the church with the women, and I said, and I get to be paid to do this work because it was so energizing. It was so rewarding. It was filled with love. It was all spiritual, wasn't political, spiritual. Big difference.
Well,
and then another thing, full potential of the human potential mm-hmm. instead of just a few.
And so the chief would sit in the circle, not to lead the circle, but to perform his function as part of the circle. Yeah. I would translate that to, from my vantage point, and I would say I'm there. I may be head of the organization, but I'm there to help create the environment. In the particular environment I was in, I was not an engineer and I had a team of engineers. You know, they were the ones doing, and they knew how to do that. I knew how to help create the environment that was conducive. So in that sense, we were all on a level playing field. We all had our part to play. I didn't consider myself better than anybody else because we all brought our expertise. And so I think that's what I'm hearing with the chief in the circle as well.
Right. And there was such a mutual respect.
Right.
Right. You know, you didn't have to have the engineering knowledge. You needed to have the interpersonal knowledge and et cetera. And so when all of that is put in, that collective, you know, I love to say that the circle is the new guru. Mm-hmm. It's not on one person. No one person will ever have the answers. And mm-hmm. I think many now of, you know, the prophecies are saying it's going to be an us, not an I. Mm-hmm. And I do think because of the million circle, that kind of concept of the tipping point, which is what it is, when you have the collective consciousness has grown to such a level, but so many people, it is now going to tip into a more global consciousness, which we already feel, and we're already connected around the world, right? Mm-hmm. To so many incredible human beings who get it and are filled with love. I believe we're there. I really believe we're there, and we have been for a while, but it will never make the news. And so we have to make our own news.
You know, Anne, when I was growing up, I remember vividly my mother, I'm 72 this year, so when I was like 12, my mother was a single mother. But she had her degree, she had a wonderful job and this, and she went into a furniture store and wanted to buy a couch. And the furniture man who knew her who knew her all her life very well, because she was very well known in the town, said, "No, I'm sorry, by Texas law, you are not allowed to sign an installment loan on your own name. You're going to have a man to come in to do this." This is not that long ago when we're talking about history, but yet look at the, this is something that we live through. There are still echoes of that we are living through today that we're having to deal with.
Yes, and Dennis is, I lived in Texas, so I can remember that when I was there. It's like, that car was in my husband's name only. It was like, what? And then, like, what?
I never gave that a second thought.
It was like, well, you know, I've been in Texas since my brother and I used to play together. So I knew I was just as strong as he was. But it is so, you know, one of the things I have to realize, and we all have to realize, we've made a lot of gains in women's equality, but there are countries and other spots of our country in which that's not the case.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, where I am learning to how to be an ally to Black people, brown people, to people who are on the fringes. Mm-hmm. I come from privilege. You come from privilege. We have to learn how to be allies, standing shoulder to shoulder, because we don't live in a world that is fair yet. No.
No. And that's where, how do you recharge when you get discouraged? I mean, I'm wired optimistic, so people go, well, you know, that's fine for you. But I mean, even optimists can get the blues. So it can, you know, it's part of this process how do you recharge and renew your spirit for when you're feeling discouraged or you're coming about? What is your process, Anne?
Well, I think one thing is you go through that sadness, anger, you feel it in your body and you don't ignore it. I play tennis. And so I play tennis probably 4 times a week. And, you know, I'm 78. So, but I'm going to be playing when I'm 97, I think.
It'll be you and Chris Everett out on there lobbing them back and forth with that two-handed backhand.
But you do need to get it out of your body. You need to just... When I worked in the patriarchy, in the National Church, I fortunately lived in Connecticut. It's in New York City. I could take the train. I would go home and because I would be beaten up in that place, seriously. Not when I was with women, that's where I was charged, but there I would be beaten up. And I was speaking on behalf of the women, but it was like, we don't want to hear that. I had a hot tub outside and I would call it my patriarchal cleansing. Mm-hmm. And every morning I get up and I take a bath and I would call it my baptism so I could start the day fresh and new. So I think you have you got to do your own rituals. And I'm an optimist, but that doesn't mean we don't get down. That doesn't mean we don't get hurt. That doesn't mean that it doesn't, you know, I don't try to watch television because I'm very sensitive. It can just go inside my body. And then it's just like, if you feel it in your body, get it out. And men knows how to do that better than women. We learn to try to be nice and, you know, the peacemakers. And that's where women would a lot of times suffer more from depression and from more of those stress-related diseases because we don't get it out of our body. So, you know, get it out of your body. And then when you're feeling up, don't you just feel like dancing around the room? And
yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's an interesting conundrum, because what I have found is that sometimes expressing stress through unconstructive ways, through anger or through, I mean, I actually feel better after I have done that. Which is weird, because I have now yelled at Melissa, or I have said something, you know, and so then we have to go through the apology process and all that. And I sit there and I think, well, wait a minute, there must be a more constructive way when these huge emotions come up for me to be able to discharge them in the same way that if we discharge it, like a come up, you know how when you put your feet across a rug and then you discharge the electricity against the doorknob. So if there are ways to discharge it when I hit those emotions, because that's what Clay and I are talking about in our search for the new compassionate male, is how do we deal with these deep and dark emotions as they come up instead of just pushing them down and deal with them in the process so that they are constructive rather than destructive?
Well, you know, when you I lived in Utah also, and the Mormon Church can do a real number on women. Mm-hmm. And so I met this woman whose doctor told her at 30 years old, if you don't learn how to express anger, you're going to be in a wheelchair. She had crippling arthritis. And so she learned how to do anger workshops. And this was in the 70s. And so what I learned was, yes, you get the hot anger and we know that's adrenaline and you have to get it out. So what run, holler, if you're at work, I just say, go into the ladies' room and scream down the toilet.
That's an interesting echo.
I just see, I'm envisioning walking by the toilet and just, just on the outside in the hallway. You just go, okay, well, all right, well, good.
There goes Anne.
you physically have to, and firefighters know this, and policemen have been taught this, and anybody who's dealing with a stressful situation, is that you've got to get that adrenaline out of your system. And as you know, that when hot anger, there's no blood going to your brain. It's going to your vital organs for the fight and flight.
Certainly.
That's just us. And that's when you, unfortunately, if you don't do that, that's when you take it out on somebody inappropriately.
Absolutely.
You don't want to do that. So it's like, you know, they'll say count to 10. That helps in a way, but are you getting out the adrenaline? So I'm saying do a physical thing. You know, it can just be running in place for a while, or it can take a walk, just physically getting out. But visualize seeing it going out of your body. Seeing the, just, mm-hmm. I think you both are visual people. Just see it. Don't think it. See it just leaving your body and then coming. And then it goes to the warm anger, because anger is good. We know anger is good. It's creative. And when we process our anger, and I'm telling you how what you did really hurt me and you could hear me, we become even more in an intimate, trusting relationship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful, Anne.
You know, when you were just talking about feeling it and processing it out, the best image that I have seen of that is this videotape of this leopard catching this impala and taking it down, and it's holding it, you know, and the impala looks dead, just laying there. And the hyenas come up and chase off the leopard. And then the impala just laying there. And then all of a sudden it starts breathing and it gets up and it stands up and it's just shaking all over, just shaking, 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 shaking. Then it stops, shakes its head once and off it goes. Life goes on.
Yeah.
It was shaking out the adrenaline, shaking out the cortisol, or, you know, out of its system to shake it off, to get it out, to release it. And it's the image that I saw when you were making that gesture.
I love that. And I love the new thought for me is the difference between the destructiveness of hot anger and the constructiveness of warm anger. So it takes me out of the need to judge anger.
Yeah. Yep.
I've never heard the term hot anger, warm anger.
That's what we had Anne for. That's why we asked. We asked Anne to come and share with us.
Well, it's and you know, the pretty stereotypical thing was that men would be in the hot anger women would stuff it and be in the cold anger.
Ugh.
There you go. Oh, that's brilliant.
You know, and that the passive aggressive is like, you know, I just feel like I got stabbed in the back, right? But it was just that, so, and all of them, but the warm anger is creative. And if we could just, you know, we help one another to do that. And song and dance and rituals all help that. Many, many tribal people have always done that. The first time I went to Africa and I was with the Anglican women and they were, you know, they were doing this incredible dance. I said, oh, I love your dance. He said, we don't dance. I said, what? He says, we're praying. I said, well, then I love your praying.
Anne, have you seen an evolution in the Anglican Church? Has there been a reformation or a growth in the Anglican Church from your experience? Because I ask that in Islam, I have acquaintances that are Islam and say, is there a reformation or is there an evolution happening within Islam? Are there within Hinduism? Is there how is that happening? So I would, from your perspective in the Anglican Church, are there things in motion there?
Well, there are things in motion on the national level that are really good. And yet if you were to look at some of the newly elected bishops who are nominated, they're mostly people of color, and there are a lot of women. So our church is going to change on a national level. Will it change enough on a local level? I don't know. The churches are dying. All religions are dying. We know that. And it was so amazing is that we're going to have on that death throes of patriarchy that you both are on, we're having these two young people. One is from South Africa, and of course she knew Bishop Tutu, and she knew Nelson Mandela when she was just a baby. Mm-hmm. And this other young man's parents were born and came from India, came to America, and one's a Sikh and one's a Hindu. And these two young people, the boy, the young man, and the young woman, they get it of what the church has to do, which is to be totally inclusive, to not be patriarchal, to be totally loving, and to preach love, which the head of our church right now, Michael Curry, he is a black man, and so he brings the black church into our very staid English kind of Episcopal
church. Yes.
So he has brought all kinds of love, and he talks about the love of Jesus, and he brings the gospel back. And the gospel is a liberating force. All religions have a liberating force, and they were all co-opted, you know, to be able to preach something that would support slavery, would support hate, support differences, all of that. But that, so can the church listen, if they were to listen this to the youth and let these leaders who are so good really be the voice, and Michael Curry happens to be one, and there are many others now, who really, really get it, the church will thrive. And I'm not going to give up on the church because there is, we'll say, 6 billion people in the world relate to some form of religion or spiritual practice. So if we want to have influence, we can't just say, you know, it's trying to transform within.
How beautiful. How beautiful. And is there anything that we haven't talked about on this today that is on your mind and on your heart?
Well, yeah, I think the other thing is, we talked about that on the other one, is the rise of the divine feminine that has been hidden or forbidden. And it's the other thing for me is you got to change the language.
Yes.
Change the language, and especially in our churches, and we're not afraid of saying God, Mother, Father, the divine feminine and masculine, then it really will change. And this really quick. One of the last things I did when I was at the church is I said, let's write let's write our own prayer book. And it's called Women's Uncommon Prayers. And the Episcopalians love prayer books,
Where is that available?
You can get that on Amazon.
At Women's Uncommon Prayers.
Yeah.
Women's Uncommon Prayers. That's beautiful.
Our lives revealed, nurtured, and celebrated. And the women, a lot of women said, we don't know how to pray. I said, well, how do you talk to God? I said, just do it the way that you talk to God. We had so many that we could have done 4 books. And this went into its 4th printing or 5th printing. And it goes from birth until death. It goes through a woman who's had an abortion. No judgment. It was her choice between herself and her doctor. And about everything. So can I just read you just one thing?
Please. Yes.
Are you kidding? That was my next request.
Okay, let me see if I can find it. Okay, so because we had so much, I didn't need to do any of it, you know, but then I said, okay, I'll do one. And I was in Kensington Gardens in England, London, and I was a little jet lagged. And I was watching a family of swans, in which the little babies were in between the mother and the father, right? Mm. Nobody would get to those little babies. I mean, one was in the front and one was in the back, and boy, they marched. So here I said, God is not a single parent. Father God, creator of us all, how long will we see you as a single parent? Send your loving wisdom to fill our hearts and minds with new words of inclusivity. Open our eyes to see images that nurture and heal our brokenness. Grant us courage and your freedom to try new words that restore balance in all our relationships. And like the baby swans being guarded and cared for by both parents, let the wholeness of you be illuminated in us. Words, so important.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you for the beautiful way that you send us off today. Thank you for me getting a chance to spend some time with you. Clay, any closing words?
I'm speechless. I just loved our time together. I appreciate it, Anne.
And thank you, Anne Smith, thank you so much for this. We'll put a link to that book on the website. I say we, you know, it's so funny. We use the collective we. We are doing this. Well, Clay's doing it all. You know, Clay does all the stuff in this. But I say we. It's the royal we. Yes. But anyhow, thank you so much for the graciousness of your time, for helping us. We set the intention to exit this conversation at a higher level of consciousness, and I did so much just to be in your presence and to have the gracefulness of who you are and what you bring to the table.
Well, I honor your work, both of you. Your work of the compassionate male is probably some of the most important, well, is the most important work that is needed now, so thank you.
Our pleasure. And this is what we are learning and bringing, because we know that we've got to be part of the solution. We can't just sit back and abrogate and say, well, all right, you guys take over now. No, we got to get in and work right side by side you to help to create this more compassionate world where we all can survive and thrive. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of In Search of the New Compassionate Male with Anne Smith, our wonderful guest today, the founder, Clay Boykin. I'm Dennis Tardon, and we will see you next time.